tomorrow.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Advantage with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, well, hopefully he'll give us some advice on the way forward, if you will, with the financial markets. Michael Schauel back with us, Chairman, Chief Executive Officer at Marketfield Asset Management. They've got over $5.5 million in assets under management. Michael joins us in our studio. Welcome back to Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you. Good morning.
So what did you think about the back and forth with Greece over the last month or so?
You know, I always accepted it was a political crisis, but I always had a hard time feeling that it was in any way a financial crisis or anything that the market was seriously bothered about. I mean, clearly on days that it looked like it would all end in default or dismissal of Greece out of the euro, markets went down, but they never went down by enough to make you feel that this was really going to snowball into, say, the summer of 2011.
There was never extreme selling.
No, and you never saw moves in volatility or credit spreads or all the sorts of measures of financial stress that you would look at and would indicate that this was really kind of ever getting out of control. So I think politically, yeah, I mean, I can understand why politicians are interested and political scientists are interested, but portfolio managers, I don't think ever took this that seriously.
What do you think is more important in this market environment right now, Michael, that do you think investors should be paying attention to?
You know, I think locally, I think what happens to long-term interest rates, I think is potentially important. Obviously, we're in the middle of an earnings season, which is, I think, reminding us that this is a pretty strong economy as far as the corporate sector is concerned.
Even though earnings are supposed to be down, a lot of it's in the energy sector.
In energy, yes. But say, for instance, the financial sector, you know, all those large cap banks look like they might finally have worked their way through this cycle to the point that they're actually capable of making some money. The technology earnings have generally been good. You know, so I think overall, ex-energy, I think S&P earnings will be okay. I think as the sort of summer matures, you know, you've got the September Fed meeting coming up. And, you know, I think throughout the Greek crisis and the volatility out of China, what was striking to us was that every time things settled down, long-term interest rates popped. And, you know, there does seem to be, I think, something of an uptrend in U.S. long-term interest rates. At the moment, it hasn't got to the point that it really unnerves the equity market. But, you know, I think if we had a domestic risk, that's the one I would be watching.
What's, though, a rate that you really have to, you know, you start to see things impact things dramatically? Like, look at the two-year notes at 0.70 right now.
Yeah, no,
five-year notes
not,
at 1.70.
I don't even think this is, it's one of these funny things. I'm not that concerned that interest rates are going to choke off economic growth. And
right.
I'm one of these people who believes the Fed could
Well, the Fed doesn't want to do that either.
No, and I don't, you know, if the Fed was at 50 or 75 basis points, it's not economic growth I would be concerned about. But you know, I do think at some point in time, markets start to, you know, equity markets start to pay attention. People get nervous. And, you know, I would sort of circle 250, 260 in the 10-year is a level above which fixed income investors themselves are starting to get nervous.
Right.
And
we're at 237 today.
Yes, exactly. So you've got some leeway. You're a lot higher than you were 6 months ago. And that move has taken place without provoking any nervousness in the fixed income space. There's been really zero evidence of redemption, you know, maybe a little bit in high yield, but nothing like the kind of nervousness that you saw in 2013. So, you know, as I say, I'm not negative about the U.S. equity market, but if you told me we were going to have a domestically driven correction, that's what I would look to for, you know, for a catalyst internationally. You know, I think the recent...
Does it happen, though? Let's go back to the U.S. focus for a second.
Sure.
Because, I mean, typically I think we've seen in terms of market cycles that even when the Fed starts to raise rates, that still you see gains in the equity markets for some time. I mean,
yes.
Again, so that 10-year note, that level that you said it was at 250, that's when you start to see things become a little bit more problematic or what?
You know, because I do think the you know, investors don't necessarily think like economists. I do think that at a sort of above 250, 260, fixed income investors themselves start to become under pressure within their portfolios.
And they're not ready for that. They've been spoiled.
No, and that's when you just have a simple risk of divestments, you know, within that space. And then you start, you know, that's when things kind of potentially get quite messy. But I think as far as underlying economic activity is concerned, 10-year yields at 250 or 260 are no concern. And 2-year yields at 100 basis points really should be no concern.
How tricky do you think it is for the Federal Reserve right now? I mean, I feel like every time we hear from Janet Yellen and company, you get a little bit like, we think we can do this, but, You know, if we don't, you know, maybe we won't.
No,
in terms of raising rates.
You know, it's like a parent wanting to put a child to bed. And, you know, eventually, they're just going to have to say it's bedtime. And you know, my feeling is that as long as there are no disruptive influences in September, they will raise rates in September simply because they want to start this process.
They want to do this.
Yes, they want to do this. They want to say, you know, the emergency is over and now we're heading back towards normality, even if they believe that it will take them 24, 36 months to get to normal. And, you know, I do think that turning point is, you know, is important. But I think already, I would argue that U.S. monetary conditions have started to tighten. You know, the long and short-term rates have gone up. Mm-hmm. The Fed is not adding to its collection of treasury securities and mortgages. And the Chinese have been quite aggressive sellers of U.S. fixed income. Their reserves are down about $300 billion, which in 12 months, which is, you know...
How significant is that?
Well, it's about 25% of the pace of QE3, to put it into context. It's not nothing. And it's not so much that it's caused, you know, monetary conditions here to tighten to the point that they're problematic. But I think at least on a sort of global relative basis, the U.S. has monetary conditions which are loose but are starting to get tighter. And certainly the rest of the developed world has loose monetary conditions which continue to get looser. And I think that's a big, you know, I think the relative monetary conditions in the U.S. are deteriorating more than the absolute ones.
I want to talk more about China in a moment. But sure. You also write about the U.S. housing industry.
Yeah.
You think housing is a strong point here or what?
Yes, I think it should more than fully participate in the rest of this cycle.
Even if we start to see rates creep a little bit higher and the impact that might have on mortgage rates.
Yes, absolutely. And you use the right term, creep. I mean, clearly if long-term rates were up 150 basis points in 2 weeks, I think that would put a short-term crimp on housing activity.
Or get people who have been on the fence to say, finally, I want to lock in a rate.
Yeah, but I think the housing is driven mostly by the labor market. And I think the labor market has got to the point that it's built enough confidence that you're seeing household formation finally accelerate after years of being nothing. And rental markets, you know, across the nation are now tight. And you're starting to see evidence that the really sort of slow pace of activity in the new home market is starting to move higher. And I always feel that housing is a almost uniquely psychological market. You know, people wait for ages to make that decision, and then, you know, they make this dramatic decision in a real rush about 2 weeks after all their friends have done so. So I think that's where we are.
Hey, I want to ask you before we move on to some other stuff, because we've been talking about the U.S. Market. We had a story we highlighted, Michael, before, and it talked about momentum stocks, and they talked about those shares with the most price appreciation in the last 2 to 12 months, how they are rising three times as fast as the S&P 500 this year, and it's on par with the best years ever recorded. So that whole idea, do you chase momentum, with the caveat that can get you into trouble? Your take on that?
Well, I think it's a fully mature bull market now in the U.S., and that's simply what happens to them. And it's one reason why, as top-down investors, we're not that enamored with it. I wouldn't want to be short, but I don't particularly want to be here. But I think this is what happens in mature bull markets, that leadership becomes obvious and extreme. And, you know, massive reallocations.
But it's not the extremes that we saw necessarily in 2000 or 99.
No. I don't mean it's extremely overvalued. What I mean is that the index itself just starts to rely on a relatively small number of issues. I mean, on Friday, for instance, 80% of the S&P was down. The market was up.
Yeah.
And that was really, you know, a couple of stocks, you know, doing all that work.
Thank you, Google and some others.
I'm not saying it's anything like late 99, early 2000. But I will say that Google added, I think, $100 billion of market cap last week.
It's huge.
Doesn't happen that often. I mean, Microsoft did it in December of 99 and Cisco in March of 2000. And I think PetroChina added $400 billion in 2007, which was another story. But you know, for companies to add that much market cap in that short a period of time just simply tells you that it becomes obvious to a vast number of investors that they simply need to be there at the same time. And that just tells me we're quite far along in this bull market, even though the Fed hasn't even started raising rates yet.
So. What is your U.S. exposure, just quickly?
You know, we're well under a global benchmark. We're long housing, we're long a bunch of individual names in sectors which we still think are, you know, doing okay, like defense and some of the financials. But as a macro idea, I think the U.S. has been thoroughly picked over by global investors, and I think you will make money investing on a bottom-up basis in companies who get the story right. But it's going to be, you know, you're going to be over-rewarded, I think, in the sectors which offer leadership from this point on.
You know, you mentioned earlier China selling U.S. treasuries, and I guess we're trying to get our head around, with all the stuff that was going on in Greece, whether we were missing something in China that was much more significant. Are we? You guys have exposure to China.
You know, I think it's critical, and I think there's no doubt that the U.S. equity market paid meaningful attention to China when it was, you know, in the middle of that reverse. You know, I don't think anybody can be sure what's happening, but the economic data on balance over the last couple of months do suggest that the domestic economy is bottoming. The export sector looks okay. The housing data has been, you know, particularly good relative to what people would have expected over the last couple of months. You know, the equity market, I'd sort of split it into three buckets. The sort of local Shenzhen market, which is highly speculative and not for the likes of me. The local A-share market, which I think, as you saw, you know, is subject to, I think, too much domestic interference by the regulators. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the offshore market, you know, which I think, you know, offers, I think you're being well paid to take the risk of being there. I think it's volatile, but I think that's somewhere that I think you should have some exposure.
And you guys do.
We absolutely do.
You hold on to it. All right, Michael, thank you so much. Michael Shaul, he's Chairman, Chief Executive Officer at Marketfield Asset Management, joining us in our Bloomberg Advantage studio in New York. You are listening to the Bloomberg Advantage right here on Bloomberg Radio.